I'm thrilled to share this episode with you. I had the opportunity to interview Matt Maka, the president of the Minnesota Wild. For those of you that listen to the Behind the Billboard podcast but are not in Minnesota, the Minnesota Wild are the NHL hockey team here, and Matt's a servant leader, and I had so many takeaways from this interview. I can't tell you how much I look up to Matt and his leadership style. He's an incredible human being. I know you will find so much value in this interview.
Welcome to the Behind the Billboard podcast, a living, breathing, interactive conversation about getting better as a leader, a team, and as a person. We believe that success is all about people, and we're on a mission to help you grow. Here's your host, Chris Lindahl.
Welcome back to the Behind the Billboard podcast. When I think about teams, I think sports organization sort of defines team. Mm-hmm. And I feel like sports organizations define so much of what a team is in business.
Yeah,
right
on, right on. Yeah, I mean, the obvious thing that we all see is the play on the ice, right? The team that plays on the ice. And that's what we're almost interested in. But you're right, there's a lot more to a sports organization that has to work on the business side too in terms of a team environment. And at the end of the day, we need to integrate the two as well. And so that is challenging sometimes, and we need to keep working at it and get better at it, but that is the job in front of us, is integrating the business and sports operation of a team into one team that wins together. And, you know, sometimes we do that well and sometimes we struggle, but every day we're trying to get better.
You run a very successful organization. You have a lot of smart people around you, and I know you've worked really hard, but take me back to like some of the early days. I know where you went to college, and I'd love to get a little perspective of sort of where you came from and your background.
Back in college at the University of Minnesota, I went to Wise out of high school and then to University of Minnesota. And I was just, you know, another dumb undergrad looking to figure out what I'm going to do with my life, right? And I loved sports, you know, like a lot of people do, right? But back then, I never dreamed that I would end up as the president of the Wild. And if somebody had told me that, I would have been like thrilled and shocked at the same time. But I didn't set out to do that. I set out to work in an area that I was passionate about. So that turned out to be sports. My first job out of college was in a sporting goods company called Rollerblade, which was based here in the Twin Cities, run by Bob Nagley, who became the first owner of the Wild. But anyway, I spent 15 years at Rollerblade with Bob Nagley, and Bob was a great mentor for me. And I learned a ton from him about leadership and a lot of different things over 15 years. And we ended up having a really successful run with Rollerblade. It grew from a $1 million company in the early 80s to a $225 million company in the early 90s. So that was an education all by itself.
Yeah, what was your role?
Mostly I started in sales and then ended up in marketing. I actually ran our international business for 4 years, and that was interesting too, just traveling a little bit. But kind of spreading the good news about Rollerblade around the world and selling and marketing. And in a company with that kind of a growth curve, there was a ton to learn, right? So I never went back to get MBA, but I do feel like I kind of got one at Rollerblade, you know, on the job training, right? So wonderful experience working for a great person in Bob Nagley and a lot of other great people as well. And then Bob sold the company in 1995. I stayed on board and the culture kind of changed a little bit. And then Bob called me in 97 when he was chasing down the idea of trying to bring NHL hockey back home. And, you know, he said, Matt, if we get there, would you come over? And I thought about that for all of, you know, 5 seconds and said, yeah, I'd definitely come over, Bob. And so that's how it all worked out. But at the end of the day, it was the relationship that Bob and I built together that and the trust that we established with each other that gave me that second opportunity to start up the Wild, because Rollerblade was really a startup. And so Bob knew that I had been through a startup before and he's going to start something else up again here and thought that maybe I'd have some skills that would apply. And so I came over to the Wild and it was just another great opportunity to learn and grow and take on different responsibility and bring hockey back home, which was awesome.
When you started with the Wild, you know, maybe a little bit of like the different roles you've...
Yeah, I started in the marketing department. I was a vice president of marketing to begin with. And then just as it happens, opportunities came around, you know, executives come and go. And so we had a person that was running our corporate sponsorship department that left. And all of a sudden there was an opening there as well. And the president at the time, Todd Lewicki, who went on to become lots of different things, including the chief operating officer of the NFL, and is now starting up the Seattle franchise that's going to start in NHL just a couple of years from now. Todd came to me and said, hey, we got this opening in corporate. Could you handle marketing in corporate? I said, I don't know if I can, but I'll give it a shot, right? And so I got to run and learn about the corporate area and run it at the same time. Thankfully, there were some really good people that knew what they were doing underneath me. And I added a little bit of leadership maybe. And then, you know, kind of the same thing happened with a couple other departments. And then Todd left one day, kind of unexpectedly, but to a great opportunity. And there was an availability of kind of more leadership with what turned out to be, I forget what my title was there after Todd left, but basically I became chief operating officer and then eventually president. And just dumb luck, some hard work, and paying attention to how to treat people, I think. I have a sign at the front of my office, on my door at my office. So anybody who walks inside my and outside my office, if they're paying attention, will read a sign that says, work hard and be nice. And that's pretty simple and kind of complex at the same time,
because
it's not always easy to be nice in our worst moments as human beings.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not always easy to work hard when we're tired, right? And things like this. So, because we're human beings and we have frailties and we have moments, right? But I really do think that any success I've had, and I think with a lot of people that I meet, hard work and getting along with people matters a lot. And so that's my advice to people.
Yeah, that's so good. So when the Wild organization was started, I mean, as a startup, essentially.
Yeah.
And I know this from my company in the early days. I mean, not everything was figured out. We're still learning, right?
Yeah.
Walk me through like those early days of what things looked like, what you're doing. Like,
I have to say, and this will come out wrong because I don't mean to say that the present day isn't fun and interesting, but those were the best days. And I think you can probably relate to
this,
Chris.
Yeah.
Because you look back, there was no script, right? And there was no, in our case, there was no history necessarily to look back on. We could look back on the North Stars a bit, but that was different, you know, also. And it was a different time and different era, right? So we really kind of had a blank slate and needed to make it up as we went along. And so the beauty and the curse and blessing we had was that, if you do recall, we were granted the franchise in 1997, and we couldn't start play till 2000 because we needed to tear down the old St. Paul Civic Center and build XL Energy Center, right? So we had 3 years before we were going to start play, and yet we had the makings of an organization. But it was a curse in that we weren't very tangible to people. We didn't have a player or a coach or a general manager for two of those 3 years, but we had time, and I thought we used that time wisely. And I think if we were successful with our marketing efforts and the brand of the state of hockey, it came because we spent those 2 years talking to our prospective customers and asking them what their hopes and dreams were for this franchise, and we listened pretty well. And the whole state of hockey brand platform, maybe we created those words, but our customers told us this was the state of hockey. Not in so many words, but the idea and the essence came from them about the pride and heritage and tradition of hockey in Minnesota. And they wanted an organization that would pay homage to that and be stewards of it and continue it, right? And so we put the few words to it, the state of hockey, but they told us this is the state of hockey. And when you listen to your customers and you do your research, they're pretty smart and they know what's going on. And we did that pretty well.
State of hockey. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, every time I hear that, I mean, I get a feeling associated with it every single time. And I love your point about, you know, listening to your customers, and listening is such a big part of all of this.
Totally.
You know, and we can learn so much.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I think sometimes, you know, maybe we don't always give credit to our customers, you know, for knowing as much as they know and leading us in directions that make a lot of sense, you know. And we all do, if we're a good company, we all do research, but really listening to it, diving into it, probing into it to get to the right place is really important. And these days, as you and I were just discussing about your industry, there's so much data available. If we're smart and we're using it well, we can get to the promised land. We really can. But there's misuses of it, or there's ignorance of it. And companies that I think that are failing today are in those categories where they're just, no, I'm smarter than my customer and I know what's right, or just misinterpreting data can happen even with good intentions. So I think that's a critical stage for any company. But for us in the early days, those 3 years were such an important foundational few years for us to get things right. And I think we did. And I think it's still paying off.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, having a solid foundation, it's critical to the future. I mean, the people that enter your organization now won't fear nearly the pain back then. But what were some of the pain points or the challenges of, maybe you're short-staffed?
Certainly a human resource, in the early days, of course. We were probably understaffed for a little while, and there was always too much to do for a big job. But that was okay. That there's something invigorating about that, too. And it also, as you know, it also creates a real bond between people when everybody's overworked and working super hard, but energetic and passionate.
Culture's
that creates,
strong.
But that creates a bond that you wouldn't get if you threw too many people at a problem too quickly, right?
Yep.
So I'm okay with that issue. But some of the challenges, there was a lot of naysayers about St. Paul as a home for a major league team. They'd never had a major league team before. And so it was a challenge. And we had to overcome that challenge and find our way. And there again, there was a lot of people, even in the media, that said, it'll never work in St. Paul. The parking will be a mess. The infrastructure, the streets will be a mess. You know, it turned out that that wasn't true. And we got people in St. Paul, especially St. Paul citizens, to say, hey, we're going to show them. You know, we're going to show them that it can work here in St. Paul, and we're going to back this team. We're going to be there for them. And there was also a little bit of a, you know, they took away something that was sacred to us, and that was hockey. The NHL did. And we're going to show them, too, by the way, that that was a mistake that they ever left the state of hockey.
It's like being the underdog, you know?
Totally. And that worked in our favor. And that was nothing we did particularly right. It was just a circumstance that we benefited from. So there were all sorts of people that wanted to say this wouldn't work and wanted to say that St. Paul couldn't be a major league town and that the two buildings, you know, the Target Center and XL could not survive together. And here we are 20 years later and both are doing pretty well. And there's a bunch of other venues that are in the market now, which are great also. So.
Of course, you mentioned something there, other venues, right? Yeah. So obviously in your role, there are other things that are happening other than just hockey, right? Yeah. And in the facility, the beautiful facility that you have.
Right, right.
We've got a lot of beautiful options.
Yeah.
So what does that look like?
Yeah, it is complex. I mean, first, you know, so being the president of the Wild, there's more to the Wild than meets the eye for especially people who are local and understand a little bit about it. There, you know, we run XL Energy Center for all the events there, and few sports teams do that. Most sports teams are just tenants in a building. They rent their number of dates they need to put their games on, and then they don't worry about it the rest of the time. For us, we have our 44 Wild home dates, and then we got to go, you know, sell the building the rest of those nights. And Target Center is trying to do the same thing, by the way, right? So it's a competitive market for a relatively mid-sized market, and it makes for a really interesting and complex business. And then we also, again, we also manage River Center Convention Center, which is attached to XL, and on a contract basis for the city of St. Paul. So that's a whole other part of our business that we need to succeed in. And so, you know, we want as many non-dark nights in our building as possible. We want, you know, all the concerts we can get and events we can get and trade shows over in River Center and all of that. So there is a lot of diversity to our organization that doesn't really meet the eye and creates some complexity and also a lot of opportunity and interesting days. And so it's a really, and I wanted to mention on the venues thing, this market is outstanding now in terms of venues. I mean, there was a time when XL Energy Center was kind of far and away the best venue.
By a long ways.
You know, it used to be the Metrodome, and Target Center was starting to age a little bit, and there wasn't much else. And now you've got US Bank Stadium, outstanding venue, Target Field, an outstanding venue, Target Center renovated, much better. The new Allianz Field, beautiful new soccer venue. Mm-hmm. I mean, now we have, like, in the market, for our size market, we have, I would put our market against any market right now for quality of venues, especially for its size. And so that creates a competitive environment for us. Mm-hmm. So we have to keep XL, you know, top notch and renovate it as it needs help. And we're working hard at that.
The thing that sticks out to me so much about sports and especially your industry is trying to figure out how you're not dependent on the score of the game.
Wins and losses.
And the wins and losses.
You got it.
I would love to hear more about what does that look like? I mean, that's a,
a tough
you
one.
Get that figured out. Like,
yeah. Figured out. And we spend a lot of time on the business side on that very issue. And it's hard because honestly, with hockey coming back to Minnesota and we were an expansion team, the expectations around our team in the early going weren't that great. They were just thrilled to have hockey back.
Sure.
And we benefited from that. And it bought us a little bit of time. But these days now, almost 20 years later, fans legitimately, especially in the state of hockey, want a winning team. And that probably is the first thing that they care about, right? Nonetheless, on the business side, we spend almost all of our time trying to take winning and losing out of the equation as much as we can, knowing that we can't take it out completely. So it comes to customer service. It comes to our brand. It comes to what is the experience of coming to and going from XL Energy Center in totality, like from the moment you get in your car and, you know, even like getting into town, getting into St. Paul, finding a parking place, entering the building, and then yep, the game's going to be going on, and that matters a lot. But what does the building feel like? What are the food and beverage offerings? What's the music that's played? You know, what's the feel and brand of XL Energy Center besides whether the Wild won or lost last night? We have to do everything we can to make that as good as it possibly can be, and then hope that the team wins too.
That's really outside of your control from a business standpoint, right? I mean, you just don't have the control over the wins and the
we
losses.
Don't. We don't.
You know,
and that's unlike a lot of other businesses out there where you have control over your quote-unquote product, right? On the business side, we don't have control over our product entirely. The hockey ops group has got to put the team together, and the business side doesn't say a lot about that. And that's fine. That's okay that we don't, you know. But we have to kind of trust their judgment about putting a good hockey team on the ice, and they'll succeed and they'll fail sometimes. But no matter what they're doing, we got to take the rest of the product and make it as good as it possibly can be, and don't use the loss as an excuse as to why we didn't succeed on the business side. We really don't allow for that, and that's hard sometimes because, you know, this year we missed the playoffs for the first time in 7 years, and that's no fun. It does create some challenges, but we have to keep going and trust the hockey side is going to get us back there quickly. And we're going to continue to do great things with customer service and touching our customers and making them care about the brand as much as the winning and the losing.
So the reason why I asked that question about really the score is not what you're dependent on is with that requires a lot of leadership. And for those that aren't familiar with the NHL or the Minnesota Wild, you elevate your staff significantly on game night.
Yeah.
And so how do you deliver a product and customer experience to people that are attending these games when they're not full-time employees?
Right on. So what you're talking about, Chris, is the fact that we have about 200 full-time employees, 100 of which probably are primarily working on the Wild because the other ones are working on concerts for the building and or River Center, right? But there's probably 100 that are really directly linked to the Wild on a daily basis, and they do a great job. But on a game night, our staff swells to close to 1,000 with part-time workers and ushers and food and beverage workers and, you know, all sorts of different people that it takes to put on a Wild game. And yeah, they're not in our office every single day and maybe know the story of the Wild and the customer service philosophy of the Wild as well as a full-time employee does. But it is our job. They are the front lines for us. And a lot of our customers' experience are with those part-time workers,
right?
So we spend a lot of time when I talked to your staff a while back, we talked about a relatively new initiative that we just launched called Service First. And it's all about putting the customer very first and creating memories for our customers, positive memories, at any moment. That we talk a lot about the empowerment to create great memories. And that's really the theme of our Service First initiative. And so we spent a fair bit of time and money on creating this Service First initiative and the behaviors that go along with it. And of course, our full-time employees are well-versed on that. But now we've spent a ton of time making sure that our part-time employees have an understanding of that philosophy and what goes along with it. And that's really a huge initiative for us that we hope will separate us from our competition. Getting back to the leadership thing, one thing I'll mention quickly, along with Service First, we committed to a style of leadership that, at least for the Wild, is what we want to promote, and that is servant leadership. And that is, you know, servant leadership is the idea that as a leader, you don't come first. Actually, you come second, third, fourth, or 100th. You put other people in front of you. You lift them up and you celebrate their achievements in front of your own. And that is sort of part and parcel of the Service First philosophy that we have, is putting customers first, putting employees first, putting everyone else first, but yourself as a leader.
So the piece that I'm curious about, and it's sort of a cliche word in today's world because it seems like everyone's talking about it, but culture. I think of like, okay, you have people that are not in your organization every single day. How do you maintain the culture at that size?
Yeah. And being honest, it's a huge challenge, right? I won't say that we've got it all nailed. We don't. We because of that disassociation we have with a number of part-time employees and trying to make them feel part of our family, we work hard at it, but we're not perfect. Our mission as an organization is a really simple one. And I like it because I think most of our employees, full-time or part-time, can remember it. And that is simply, our mission is to create a greater state of hockey. It's pretty simple, right? And it's sort of vague. You know, I mean, it's open to a lot of interpretations, but it's to make things better, make the customer's experience better, make our community better. It's about creating a better place that we all live in. And it doesn't say anything about dollars and cents or profitability, because we think that's an outcome of our employees getting up every day to make a better world. Okay. And that may even sound Pollyannish too. But we really think that's what we're here to do, is to make our community better. And if we do that, if all of our employees wake up with that goal every day to make that situation better, that circumstance better, that customer's experience better, our community better, that we will be profitable in the end, that revenues will come our way if we have that sort of altruistic goal in mind. So I don't even know if I really answered your question there.
No,
but,
yeah, you did. I mean, having that mission that's simple, that is easy to understand, I think, of our company and ours is to be generous and give back our time, treasures, and talents.
I love it.
And when you're wearing a shirt like I'm wearing right now that says be generous on it, you have to be a good person.
I love it.
You have to.
And it's simple, right?
You're right.
And it's memorable. Like, I have to say, there's a lot of company missions we've all read and seen that are three paragraphs long, and I forgot it.
No one knows what it is.
Yeah. But be generous, create a greater state of hockey.
Yes.
It's memorable. And it's like, okay, how could I do that? Let me think of my own way to do that.
For sure.
How can I be generous today? How could I create a greater state of hockey? I like the simplicity of that. It's not for everybody. Other companies do it a different way. That's how we do it.
That's what I love about it, right? There's no right or wrong way. It's just the way that you choose that works for you. And I loved when you said earlier, you said, you know, this is the way that we believe. Mm-hmm. This is not the only way.
It's not.
There's a really special friend of mine who's been a great mentor of mine for a long time. And I had the opportunity 2 weeks ago to speak at his private event. And he owns a company called BombBomb, which is video, email, and video text. Mm-hmm. Our company's used it forever. Everyone in our company has it. And basically, you know, you can do a video from your phone and you can send it off via email instead of it being an email.
Okay.
Or you can video text. And so their mission is to rehumanize the planet.
That's
and
awesome.
So I think a lot about like what you just said, like with the hockey, like rehumanize the planet. What does that mean?
Yeah.
And so for them, like they're really big in Africa and there's a lot of things that they're doing right now. And it's like,
fantastic.
We're rehumanizing the planet in the sense that we're going away from text, email to video.
Yeah.
So we're rehumanizing face-to-face communication, but we're also going to do greater good by doing these things for the community and for the world. And every time that I think of him, I think about that. And I think about how simple of a mission it is, but also it's as complex.
Yeah.
It's complex at the same time.
Yeah, it is. Like great missions are, you know, at the same time, they're at once simple and incredibly difficult, right? You know what I mean? And that's what I think. Be generous, create a greater state of hockey, or rehumanize the planet. That's an awesome, ambitious goal.
I know, right?
But it's really cool, especially this day and age. I think that's really timely.
You know, and it's why, you know, a lot of sports teams, and you could speak more to this than I could, but I'm just from watching from the outside. A lot of the teams that actually win championships aren't the most talented team.
Yeah.
They've got the synergy, right? They've got the best locker room.
Right.
They don't have the problem child in the locker room. And,
right. Exactly. There's definitely a parallel there for sure. And there's something to be, I don't think there are too many sports teams that are really successful that don't figure out the culture thing one way or another. And there are different ways, but you've got to have a symbiotic, you know, group that is pulling for each other, playing for each other somehow or another, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And then when the expectations are low too, right? You watch teams where the expectations
are playing
past expectations.
the Las Vegas Golden Knights in their first year, right? Last 2 years ago. What a perfect example of that, of exactly that. No expectation, right? And there they are in the Stanley Cup Finals in their first year. That was a great story.
Oh, amazing.
And it was a team of kind of cast-offs, right? Because they had done the expansion draft and basically taken the players that, this is a little oversimplistic, but that other teams didn't want or didn't protect anyway.
Didn't protect,
right?
Yeah.
They take these cast-offs and there's no expectations. They huddle together. And I will say, this is tragic, but you know, you remember the mass shooting.
Massacre. Yeah. The mass.
It happened a week before their opening of their season. And I think it was a rallying point.
Oh, yeah.
The next week later, the Vegas Knights took the ice. Their opening ceremony, they had to change it completely. They had to do it all about the massacre. And they did. And they did it right. And they got the community totally behind them. And to say that, to take that, you know, horrible, horrible negative thing, they made it into a positive. And that whole city just got behind them. And then the season they had, it was magical. And it was awesome.
It was really good for hockey. You know, I share this with you, but I had the opportunity. I was speaking with George McPhee at an event.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And this was right after that season. So we had a lot of conversation. Really, I'm obsessed with learning and leadership, so I asked a ton of questions. But he said, you know, the only thing that I cared about was getting that pregame ceremony right.
Wow.
I didn't care if we ever won a game.
Isn't that awesome?
And he said, you know, it was the first time that we gave the community something to smile about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I think about sports and I think about hockey, it's so much more. I can envision that Vegas Strong hashtag for the rest of my life.
For
it was
sure.
on the side of the boards.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was everywhere, and you know, everyone got behind it.
Yeah, and I think this year's version of that, it was, I know you're a good hockey fan, Chris, but maybe everybody out there isn't, but the Carolina Hurricanes this year really rallied. They were a team that not many people expected to be very good and probably not even make the playoffs, and it's been a long time since they'd even been in the playoffs. But this year, They gelled together as a team, low expectations, us against the world. And they started this celebration thing after games where they did a coordinated thing, which
it was
in
cool.
hockey, yeah. And it, but it, in hockey culture, it was not cool.
No.
But they turned it upside down and they got the whole, you know, they got all their fans behind it for sure. They did these creative celebrations when they'd win a game at home. And there were hockey traditionalists that did not like it. And in fact, Don Cherry, who's a famous, you know, Canadian commentator, called them a bunch of jerks on a Canadian broadcast. So, of course, they started selling T-shirts about a bunch of jerks. They all rallied around that. And there they were in the second round of the playoffs, which is really cool.
Yeah. I thought that whole thing was really brilliant in mm-hmm. the end. And
yeah. But they did it. They kind of broke the rules and they rallied around it and they had great success together. And you got to, even the traditionalists have to give them a little credit for that.
Yeah, that was neat. And so with that, I think a lot about innovation mm-hmm. and from where you started to where things are today. I mean, technology looks a lot different.
Boy.
Tell me a little bit about how, you know, how that's, I mean, it's changed the way that things.
For all of us,
operate.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you and I were just talking about your industry and how it has changed so much. And of course, it's true for us too. And you know, 5 years ago, even 3 years ago, really, we didn't at the Wild even have an analytics department really on the business side or the hockey side. And now we have numerous, we have full departments on both business and hockey where the way that we go to market now to get to know our customers, to sell tickets, to even sell sponsorships, comes completely differently to us and through analytics largely. And with so much data available to us and just mining that data for good decisions. And so I know that's the obvious place to go, but when I answer that question, I just have to go there. How has it changed? Analytics, information, data mining has changed completely. You know, years ago, and I have to be a little careful here, but it was print, radio, and TV, right? That and those mediums still have their place, right?
100%.
But, you know, analytics and social media and all of that have a place too. And I think we'd be foolish if we didn't figure that out. And so we spent a ton of time on that. And a lot of the way we relate to customers today are through those more new age mediums, and it's going great for us.
Really, you're competing against dollar spend. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's,
yeah.
And I love your point. I mean, you know, we're heavy on radio, TV. I mean, yeah, but it's yeah. They all work together,
they
right?
Do.
I mean, it's it's not all or none. I mean, we're trying to use all of them for different reasons.
Of course.
And it's, I think about how much competition there is for companies to spend money, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, in social media and digital. I mean, digital is a whole different conversation. And
yeah.
I mean, now they got out of home TV and streaming radio apps.
Yep.
And I mean, it's,
that's where consumers are at today. The written words again, still matters. I'm not saying that, but video is key. And like, that's what our fans want to see. And they like to watch highlights of Wild games. That's part of it, but they really want to also get to know our players through video mm-hmm. and behind the scenes feel and look of our players and how do they spend their free time. And that has become, you know, a really important part of our content. And so we do a ton of that. Like we do so much of that today compared to 2 years ago even, you know. So
it's interesting you bring that up because I watch way more video about hockey than I do read at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
And that didn't used to be that way, right? I don't know if that was my style or if the technology just wasn't there. I mean, now, I mean, the cell phone towers, I can click a button and live stream a game if I want to, you know, in high quality and high def.
Mm-hmm.
And I love watching the behind the scenes, the warm ups, and the, you know, and the players joking around, you know, flipping pucks into the crowd, and you know, pretending to hit the camera that's recording.
Yeah,
I mean, that's cool stuff to watch.
It's like
you have insider access to something that others don't.
Exactly, and again, it kind of humanizes the players when we can show them away from the rink and or in practice even and things like this. It just gives another sort of dimension to the players, which the fans love. And I understand that. I think it's cool too. You know?
Yeah. How about growth, right? As an organization, you want to continue to grow revenue.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier about, you know, I mean, you didn't make the playoffs for the first time and I'm confident you'll be back there this year. Mm-hmm. But you know, as you're growing, I mean, there are growing pains, growing challenges and, you know, I'm sure there are people that are going, well, you didn't make the playoffs. We're not going to do this and do that.
Yeah,
right?
Of course. Yeah. We got those challenges of, hey, what about what happened last year and why? And so we got to deal with that. And that's fair. We got to get better as a hockey team. And there's a huge emphasis on that. But in terms of growth, it's an interesting industry because we have basically a 19,000 seat arena that we can't make any significant changes on. And we can't increase, it's just not fair to the customer to increase prices substantially every year. You know, we take a little increase, a modest increase most years, but you know, that's not going to change our world, frankly. And we're kind of in the middle of the NHL in terms of what our average product, our average price of our tickets are. But we're trying to be fair to our customers and keep our building full. So my point is there's a bit of a finite definition to our business. So we have to kind of step outside of our arena and look at how we can grow our business in different dimensions, right? So we try to diversify a little bit. We just opened up a restaurant last couple of years ago, Herbie's, which is nearby the arena, very close to the arena. And that's worked out really well. It's a new business for us. The restaurant business is pretty different than the hockey business, and we've got a bit to learn. But we've got a built-in crowd every night that we have an event at Excel, or for that matter, if there's an event at the Ordway next door. So that's going along really nicely. It's a nice little revenue stream addition to us. We opened up a brand new practice facility this past year.
Beautiful.
It is pretty great. And there are revenues attached to that, which we can continue to grow. And so we're trying to stay within our core business and see if we can find sort of spokes off of that business that aren't totally foreign to us, but do create they go outside the four walls of Xcel Energy Center, because that is sort of a finite opportunity to some degree. There's 19,000 seats there. We can't change that, you know?
Right, yeah, in any industry, right? If you're not growing, you're dying, right? Yeah. I mean, so you always got to figure out different ways. And this kind of goes hand in hand with the innovation that we just talked about. But how do you evaluate fan feedback? Yeah. Is there a point where you've heard it enough times, or you've surveyed, you have 19,000 customers.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And so it is complex, I think. And I think there are ways you can get off track with fan feedback these days, because every day you could look at something to get some kind of fan feedback. For example, most any article that's written about the Wild these days has a comment section below,
right?
I knew
you were going to say that.
So if you spend your time in those sections,
oh boy,
you get kind of depressed.
Right.
And yet there's something that's not totally invalid.
No.
But
no.
You can't, you know, I sometimes have to remind myself, hey, this doesn't necessarily represent the majority view of all Wild fans, but there's something there.
For sure.
But honestly, where I spend more of my time and where we spend more of our time is with more, I'd say, more legitimate research that we do, where we know that we're sending out research. It's, first of all, there's enough critical mass there that it does, by science, represent enough of the core fans' point of view. And it has some balance to it, and we hear from all sides. And the beautiful thing for us is that when we have one large survey every year, and then many smaller ones throughout the year, and we're lucky. Because the Wild is a business, a public business that people really care deeply about. They're really passionate, and that doesn't mean they always love us. I mean, they might get pretty disappointed in us from time to time. But the beauty of it is they always respond to our surveys. So we get like 40% response rates,
wow,
which is unheard of,
yeah,
right? Like in a traditional consumer products company, if you got 2%, you'd be really happy. We get 40% response rate, so it's really reliable data, and you can project it and depend on it. And it gives us a really clear picture of what our fans are thinking and feeling about us at any point in time. And so we spend a ton of time on that. And again, the beauty is they're passionate. I'm not saying they're always happy with us. They're sometimes quite angry with us sometimes. But the beauty of it is they're still responding to us. The opposite of love is not hate, it's apathy. So when we don't get 40% response rates, when it drops way lower, that's when we really need to be concerned. If we got an angry fan, we can try and fix that, right?
Yeah,
if we know about that angry fan and where they're at, and we do right now. But when they stop talking to us is when we got real trouble and we're not there.
Interesting. Yeah. You have a couple different sides of the business. You have your sort of business side, I think, mm-hmm, and then you have your hockey ops.
Yep.
And so if I said that correctly.
Yeah, you got it. It's such a unique part of our industry is that they really are two different animals. And most any sports team in any sport is a two-headed animal where you have business operations and then the sport operation, in our case, hockey ops. And so the skills and experience required on both sides are completely different. We get up out of bed every day to do something fairly different from each other. But somehow or another, we have to make sure that we're working in concert at some point and we're communicating with each other. And like pretty much any business, communication is the key, right? So Craig Leopold is our owner. Paul Fenton is our general manager. I run the business side along with several others. We have regular meetings, Craig and myself and a few others, where we are talking and making sure we're talking a lot about what's happening over there, what's happening over here, and how are we integrating. And again, we don't always get it right, but communication is the key, just being vigilant about talking to each other and listening to each other and understanding each other. And again, we don't always get it right, but we do get in a room once a week, at least, and we talk and we listen. And when we get, when we're the best version of ourselves is when we're in sync with each other, we're listening to each other, we're respecting each other, and we're helping each other.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a word earlier that I think is one of the most important parts of this whole thing, and it's trust and leadership. And, and so give me a little perspective on like how trust has shown up. And I mean, that's a big part of this.
Yeah, it really is. I think it's in so many ways the key to, again, any good culture is trustworthiness. So I think it starts with, you know, having a clear picture of the type of culture you're trying to achieve and then the traits and qualities of the individual employees you're hiring. And if all the department heads are doing that well and on the same page about it, trust kind of happens naturally then, because you have people with similar values working with each other and it kind of works, right? When we get off track with each other, when we operate in silos, and we sometimes do that, mm-hmm. right? We at The Wild do at least. We can lose trust of each other at the various departments, whether it's, and I'm not even just talking hockey ops and business ops. I'm saying even within business ops, when marketing has a little different agenda or gets a little isolated from sales or public relations or whatever it might be, and the trust breaks down somehow or another. And again, it happens in the best run companies. That's when we struggle. When we are working together, respecting each other, trust, and eventually trust is the outcome of that, we do pretty darn well. And again, we ebb and flow on that. You know, it's we're all living, breathing human beings, and our organization is a living, breathing sort of entity, and we ebb and flow on our success, and trust often is an indicator.
There's another part. You mentioned the comment section. I knew you were going there because I've had my fair share of news articles and people have a strong opinion one or another about what we're doing. And, you know, I learn a lot about myself by just reading the comments sometimes because some of the things I don't even know exist. But when the team isn't playing well, you're frustrated not only from the president of the Minnesota Wild, but also as a fan.
Sure, like, of course.
I mean, you want to see the guys win too.
Of course.
And so walk me through mindset of a slump or how does Matt stay charged up and happy
right.
get the team still, you know, I mean, get your team still operating.
Yeah.
I mean, that's.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, it is tough. And I'll point to this, the last half of this year, you know, we struggled badly and we struggled, especially at home, which we almost never do. We've always, even when we were an expansion team, we were pretty good at home, you know, but we've been a great team at home for the past 6 years making the playoffs. And so, you know, this year we had a pretty awful, you know, run at home to end the season. And, you'd have to say that's why we missed the playoffs for the first time in 6 years, 7 years. And so you're right, though. There's a professional side to all of us and myself that is, hey, we've got a job to do and we have to disassociate our sort of our feelings of as a fan from the work that needs to get done today, right? There's that. But at the end of the day, we're still fans and we live and die a bit every loss and win, right? Mm-hmm. I think you're not human if you don't have that, right?
Yeah.
So I, just like our fans, you know, I walk away from a loss, especially a home loss, really deflated and beaten and bummed out. You know, it sucks, right? You know, but I have to get up, you know, I've got to process that after a loss, right?
Yeah.
I will say after most games, I'll go to Herbie's these days, and whether we win or lose, I'll spend a little time at Herbie's with some of our employees and with our owner who also goes there. And we try to process whatever just happened, right? But I need to get away from that then and just kind of just say goodbye to that loss. And the next day, we all have to get up and do our best to forget about it. No matter how difficult a loss it was, no matter how debilitating it might have been, we've got to get over it because we've got another day. You know, we've got another game tomorrow, and we've got to find a way to let go and have a short memory and get up with the energy and positivity and optimism that today's a better day. And again, some days I do that better than others, but I we're not human if we're not affected by the wins and losses and ebbs and flows of a season, and we'll do our best to disassociate, but it enters into the equation.
For sure. Yeah. So let's say the team's on the road and maybe you're not on the, you're on the road, you're at home and you're not at the game and dependent variables. Yep. And what are your thoughts around watch? I mean, do you watch the game right
every
away?
Game.
Do you record it? Do you turn it on at a certain time? Do you,
do you
go live every time?
I cannot not watch a game.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I just can't. And there are other employees I know who you know, do it differently.
Yep,
but
right.
If we're playing, I'm watching and I don't miss minutes of games. I'm watching pretty much every minute of our season. And on the road, I travel with the team occasionally, but I'm home more often than I travel because this is where the business really is. And it's you know, I find the road games to be even tougher in a way because you feel even more disassociated from what's happening to some degree. And you're just, you know, watching helplessly. And not that I can do anything when I'm in the stands, but I feel more connected to it when I'm at XL Energy Center. And we win more often at XL Energy Center, as do most teams. We win at home more often. So it just, it turns out to be a better outcome. But it's a difficult thing. For me, I have to watch. I can't not watch. I will say there are times when we're having a rough game on the road where I'll just turn the sound off because I just don't want to hear anything. I just want to assess what's going on all by myself. And that works for me. But everybody approaches it differently. But I'm addicted to every minute of a wild season, and I go with it, you know. So
yeah. I've got a question. This sort of kind of crosses between business and hockey ops and more so Minnesota Wild or professional organization in general. But it has a lot to do with like contracts and signing players and, you know. And there are times where you sign a contract and you look like a hero on the front end of the contract and the back end, there's heat and you don't, I mean, it's, you just don't know, you know? And so how do you handle some of the feedback that's specific to the contracts and the players and that stuff?
Yeah, you're right. And in any sport, this happens. You make good decisions and bad decisions sometimes on players and you live and die a little bit with that. Thankfully, Paul Fenton, our general manager, has to really deal with most of the heat on that.
Yeah, of course.
But I would say this in answer to it. The most important thing is to have a strategy, both a business strategy and a hockey strategy, and they have to integrate as well, as I've said. Like Paul right now is transitioning our team a little bit. We're going to get younger, faster, better, all right? And so we have to be strategic about forming that strategy and sticking to it, and then signing players that fit the strategy. I think when we get in trouble is when when sports teams make moves that leave the fans scratching their heads. Now, sometimes the fan doesn't know as much as he should, and they're actually wrong. It's really a good decision. But sometimes, you know, it really is. It doesn't fit the strategy, right?
No.
And I think that's when fans get a little alienated or curious or disillusioned with a team is when, well, you said you were going to try to do this, but you signed that guy over there that falls outside your strategy. I don't get that.
Yeah.
And so I think having a strategy, sticking to it, reminding yourself to stick to it, most of the time you're going to make better decisions then, and it's going to make sense to your fans, all right? You're going to still make mistakes. Hey, this player fits our strategy perfectly, and it turns out that they don't. You know, you either didn't do your homework right, or the player has a change in the way that they perform, or something like that. But I think when you have a strategy and you stick to it, it gives you the best chance of missing those valleys in a sports team's life where you fail and or you alienate your fans because you're confusing them with what you're doing, player versus strategy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm no expert in hockey. I mean, I'm an avid fan, but hockey ops is making these decisions and we're sitting in a, you know, in a chair, armchair quarterback, making decisions. We've never been in there.
Yeah.
We don't know some of it. And then, you know, some of the trades we make turn out to be like some of the best things that happen.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that sticks out to me just from a leadership standpoint, and I know the feeling a lot because we don't always get our decisions right. And I've made a ton of mistakes.
Of course, we all
got to get ahead of them and own it. And I saw a video from Craig at the end of last season.
Yeah.
And I thought it was, I don't remember all the words, I remember it's like, we're not rebuilding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Because all of a sudden there was a part of the fan base. I don't know what the numbers were.
Yeah.
Like these change scares people, right? In general.
Yeah,
and not in sports, in life.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we've had to make a lot of changes in our company and change always creates uncertainty and you're not, wow, what's going on? You know, are they cleaning house? Is it rebuilding time? And I really love that Craig recorded that video and got ahead of it with the season ticket holders and the fans and said, hey, we're making some adjustments here. And just like to your point about we're going to get, you know, younger, faster, stronger, and we're not rebuilding.
Yeah. That was a really purposeful decision we made about what do we say at that moment? It was the end of our season after missing the playoffs for the first time in 7 years. What do we say? Who says it? And how do we deliver it? So it kind of goes back to some of the things we've been talking about. We thought that Craig was our best messenger there. He's the buck stops with Craig, and he cares a great deal. And that comes across in video especially.
It was authentic. I mean, it had a lot of passion behind it.
Right. So then we worked up our message, our strategy. You know, we're going to get younger, better, faster, and we are going to transition the team. But we don't feel like we have to scrap this. We think we still have the core of a very good team here. But on the margins, we need to make some changes because we're getting a little old, getting a little slower. And Paul had already started to make some of those changes. We could point to some of those in Craig's words. So we got our message worked out. Now, the last thing was the delivery, because we certainly could have delivered that through a letter, you know, right? But we said, the way our fans are consuming our content these days.
Our video.
Yeah, back to what we were talking about earlier, is video. And again, Craig comes across pretty well on video. So let's sit him down and have just a chat with him, and we'll edit it, you know, but let's not have like where he's reading from a script or anything like that.
No.
So a lot of thought went into that, and I do think he did a great job with it, and I hope that the message got through to our fans.
I thought it was phenomenal, and I'm a big critic of that stuff and delivering that. And listen, delivering change or news is never easy, right? And you don't know the feedback you're going to get, the reaction from it, right? I mean, and so I thought he did a really good job.
Thank you.
So with all of this, there are challenges, and there are, you know, you lead a large team. And I know that at times you have to make adjustments, and sometimes they're tough adjustments with people.
Yeah.
And so is there any sort of like feedback on, you know, sort of what you found works best for you on making adjustments?
Yeah, I think I would say this. We all have sort of performance metrics that we have for our businesses and even for our employees, right? A lot of times we have plans for an individual employee to perform at these standards and these metrics, and here's your goals for the year. And so that's one thing, and those matter a great deal, I'd say. There's also sort of the gut thing, too, about, you know, how is that employee fitting in culturally, and what kind of a team member is he or she? And one thing I would say, looking back on the mistakes I've made and where we've succeeded, when you have an indication about an employee that your gut's telling you this ain't working, it's probably a good idea to act on it sooner rather than later. I think the times in my career where I've known in my heart that an employee wasn't fitting in culturally, or even if they were performing metrically pretty well, culturally they were causing issues, or maybe it's both actually, then you know you've got an issue. But it's hard work, right? It's hard to end an employee's tenure and all that kind of thing. But I have the times I've made mistakes, my most grievous mistakes were when I've let a problem fester and it affected our culture. When you do that, the burden isn't actually – there's a point in time when the burden that the employee is creating is one thing. But now your employees are looking at you as a leader and saying, and he's allowing that to happen. Mm. And I don't have the same confidence in Matt that I did, or I don't trust Matt, his judgment – because he's allowing this behavior. Yeah. So I've made some mistakes along those lines, and I now tend to want to act sooner on my gut feelings about a cultural fit in particular, even if the performance is there. And that's a hard thing to do, but it has to all work together. You have to perform well technically at your job, and you have to be a good team member. And hurting culture not only hurts culture, but it affects the trust of the leadership, and can't have that, right?
That's so spot on. I know through my years of the mistakes I've made is everyone's around you can see it and they can feel it, right? And they're thinking it.
And they're
but they're not telling you.
No, they're not going to say it to you, you know now that they're looking at you going, are you going to do something about this?
Right.
You know what I mean? You're not? Are you? What? You know? That's not good. It's just not good.
We've had some times, there were some tough conversations over the years, some people that we absolutely love that played a critical part of where our company is today.
Yeah.
And, and those are not easy conversations to have.
Yeah, it's tough. And that's why you put it off, right, as a human being. But you're affecting so much more with your other employees and your team environment. And so that's one lesson I've learned for sure.
Earlier on, you talked about Bob Nagle, and you talked about, you know, being a great leader and the things that you've learned from him. And so you've had a lot of leaders that you've been connected with, and you're an amazing leader. And I'm curious, like, from sort of your perspective and definition of the experiences that you've had throughout your life, like, what makes a great leader?
Yeah. Well, again, we said this a few times already. The first thing I'd say is there's a lot of different shapes and sizes out there of great leadership, right? The one that resonates with me the most, and I've already mentioned it as a sort of a organizational philosophy we have, I've just always appreciated servant leaders. I just like that style. Again, I've seen non-servant leaders, people that don't have that style, succeed and be great leaders. I don't mean to take away from that. But the one that appeals to me is servant leadership. I just like the humility of it. I like the style. And I read a book that is a very famous business book that really changed really affected my view of leadership. And it was Good to Great by James Collins. Yep. And he has a whole chapter devoted to leadership. And the beautiful thing about this particular book that James wrote was that he'd done all this research. He had studied two companies that are in the same industry across different industries. He had done numerous studies, right? And he had all this research. And he was looking at leadership in this particular chapter. And he was – so he – I'm just going to pick on a particular industry. He had examined Walgreens' demise and CVS's gain, right? And or fill in the blank with a different industry. I don't mean to pick on that particular company now. But what he found was that when it came to leadership, he expected and his team expected that great leaders would tend to be charismatic, big personality guys or girls who took charge of an organization, had great energy. And again, those leaders are out there and they can be effective. But what he found was a pattern that oftentimes the companies that succeeded the best were actually led by introverted leaders who tended to be servant leaders, humble, not really spotlight seekers, who put others' success and accomplishments ahead of their own. And the great line from – he has this model called servant level five leadership with five different levels to it. And at the very top, when you get to level five leader, his line is it's a combination of humility – of personal humility and professional will. So these people are really willful, strong people, but they have this humility about them that keeps them from the spotlight, but they're driving companies to great success. And I liked that a lot. It resonated with me, and that's the type of leader I try to be. I don't always succeed. I sometimes fail at that. But I like that sort of humble leader, servant leadership, but with strong will and conviction. That was a cool combination for me, that sort of almost like a, it's almost a paradox, you know, that somebody that could be sort of humble but have this strong will at the same time. And I do believe in that.
We've got a lot of emerging leaders that are listening, and you've done a lot of research. You've got a lot of – you're well-educated in the leadership area. What recommendations would you give to someone that's really trying to, you know, sort of build their leadership and their learning? Yeah. You know, what kind of advice would you – where? What kind of knowledge, you know, what kind of books?
I'm a huge fan of James Collins, who's written a ton of books, business books that are on the area of leadership. But I'm also a fan of just real world experience, right? So my answer to your question is, what advice would I give to emerging leaders in terms of how do you get to your best version of yourself as a leader?
That's the question.
Yeah, is to simply pay attention to your world, right? Because you're going to, in your professional career and even in your personal life, but more so in your professional career, you're going to run into all sorts of different types of leaders and or people that have leadership titles but aren't particularly good leaders, right? And I will say that I feel like I've learned as much from bad leaders as I did from good leaders, right? And I've had bosses in my career who were less good at leadership. I learned a ton about how not to be
them. You're right.
You know, and it was painful sometimes. And I've talked to some people at my low moments working under a boss that I wasn't as fond of. And they said, hey, you know, hang in there. You're learning. You're learning and growing right now. Even if it's a little painful, you're learning and growing about how you're going to, if you ever get to that place, how you're going to behave. And it won't be that way. You're going to do it in a different way. You're going to do it in a way that would inspire you. And you know what that is. And it's probably going to help. It's probably going to be good for other people too. And then, like I say, I've had some great bosses too, and I've learned a ton from how to do it right as well. But I would say be patient when you find yourself in challenging circumstances with somebody who's a superior to you that you need to somehow answer to. Be patient, pay attention, learn from their mistakes, as well as the people that you really admire and maybe are mentors of you or that you want to be someday and emulate them. That's awesome too. But pay attention to the people that are doing it wrong too, because you're going to, that's valuable too, actually.
That's really, really, really good advice. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. That is really good. If you were to give advice to Matt right out of college, you know, if you're going back and what you know today, you know, what advice would you sort of give back? And a little bit plays into what we just said, but if you're specifically talking to yourself and where you were when you, you graduated college, what advice would you give to what you know today?
Yeah. So the main thing I would say to my 19-year-old self or 22-year-old self or whatever would be have a plan, but be ready for life to happen too. Because I'm so impressed with young people these days because they're quite more planful than I was back then, you know, and I really admire that. And I really don't mean to dismiss it. You need to have a plan. Mm-hmm. But be ready for a curveball that might be a good thing,
yeah.
you know, that comes your way, an opportunity, a professional opportunity that comes your way, or a personal opportunity that comes your way that you didn't expect, didn't plan for, but you're intrigued by it. You know, it's like, well, I wasn't thinking that, but boy, that's kind of interesting. I didn't expect I'd have that opportunity over there. And maybe, and my heart's kind of responding to that a little bit. That's what happened to me. I didn't plan to be the president of the Wild. I'm really thrilled to be there now. But the opportunities that came to me weren't exactly what I thought I'd be. You know, I actually wanted to get into sports broadcasting, and I was really bad at it, as it turned out. I mean, I went down a path with an internship, and I created a resume tape, and I wasn't very good at it, actually. Another opportunity came my way by the way of a want ad that I responded to and ended up with a job at Rollerblade, and that led to a wonderful career of learning and growth. And then I met Bob Nagle, who has been a great leader in my life, and that led me to the Wild, and then he sold the company to Craig Leopold, who's also been a great mentor to me. And none of that was in my plan back when I was 22. You know, I thought I was going to be a great sports broadcaster, you know, and that didn't turn out at all for me. But I don't regret one day of what happened, and I stayed open to the possibility of something else, and I would suggest that.
That was great advice. Mm-hmm. This was an incredible interview, and I just want to say thank you so much
for
being here. Yeah, I am so impressed by you and
the
Minnesota Wild organization, and it's been fun to watch. And I feel like, you know, things in life happen for a reason, and you know, we've been in a partnership for a very long time with the organization, and we share a lot of the same things. And, it's been a nice to be a part of. And so I'm just going to say for the listeners, you know, I mean, if you love this episode, I'd love to see a 5-star rating if we earned it. And then, you know, if you want to leave a review or something in the comment section, hopefully we got kind words and you know, any feedback that you have for me or for Matt, I always read all of them on our Behind the Billboard Facebook page. And if there's someone else you think this would be a benefit for, share it on social media. And I mean, this thing is, you know, our Behind the Billboard podcast has grown significantly by having guests like you, Matt. So thank you.
Well, congratulations on that. And Chris, thanks too for your partnership with the Wild. You're a longtime support of us. We're really appreciative of that. You've been a great partner. And I also really respect the way you run your business and what's happening with your business. Congratulations.
Appreciate that. Thank you so much. Thanks for being here.
If you loved this episode, give us a great review, subscribe, and share us socially so we can spread the word and build a community of difference makers. And if there's a leader who inspires you, send your suggestions for future guests to Chris's team at behindthebillboard.com so we can get better.